to look at the tag, and then they share the expense of the pole. My other comment is, underground wiring has its problems also with water, especially salt water. Back to net.
Yeah, I still missed Jeff. I missed, you told us about Verizon and underground wiring. Good information. I still missed your full call and name, sir. Give it to me one more time. Mr. TJE, yes, give me your call and name one more time.
Golf Juliet Echo, Ed, Easy Dog. Over.
I got the Golf Juliet Echo and Easy Dog, Ed. Give me the prefix in front of the two.
Kilo 2.
Okay, Kilo 2, Golf Juliet Echo. Why in the world did that not work when I went to QRZ? Okay, I did something wrong. Thank you, Ed. Alrighty, that was Tim, the next person on the list. Okay, where's my silly list here? Okay, that was going to be the other Jim. KD2BHY. Go right ahead, Jim. KD2BHY, K2LIW.
Dick, and yeah, thanks for all this technet. And yeah, I just had a question about originally a little while ago, like 3 or 4 months ago, I started to build a transmitter, but I kind of forgot about it, and I just remembered that I was, and I got a few parts for it, and I have about half of the parts. I've assembled some of them, but there are some parts that I'm having trouble with, and some that I'm have that are hard to find for me. And I was just wondering if you could give me the fine parts and how to use some parts.
Yeah, back in the days, long before you were born, Jim, electronic enthusiasts used to go to Lafayette Radio. They no longer exist. For a while, we used to go to Arrow Electronics. They no longer exist, at least not in the form they used to. And these places had all the parts you want in the back room. Any size capacitor, resistor, inductor, a whole big supply of transformers, transistors, power supplies, oscilloscopes, lots and lots of stuff. Nowadays, you go to Radio Shack or you go to their website, and a heck of a lot of the parts are no longer there. An awful lot of the parts you can order online, but you can't go to the store and buy them. And so I, for instance, wanted to buy the metal straps to go around a chimney to remount a temporary antenna on my house. And the one place on Long Island that's left that still has a pretty good supply of parts and things that you really need if you're a serious electronic constructor. Let me drop it. Yeah, the one place that's still left is L&L Supply in Syosset. L&L Supply. They keep calling them L&L Electronics, but it's L&L Supply. And it's not an easy place to find. Even though you've got the address, they're not right on the street. Their building is behind another building. So it takes a little bit of a search. And when you find the place, it's a tiny little door with a little bit of a sign on top. You walk inside and you find all kinds of printed circuit boards and lots of parts. So that's one of the places where you can still get individual parts to build chunks of electronics. That's about the last one I know of on Long Island. Other than that, the online services, why can't I think of the name of the one that, what's the one where you can, there's no minimum order? John, you know the one I'm talking about. The online service where we can buy parts that has no minimum order. KC2WGB, KQRIW.
Yeah, Dick, you've got Allied, Mauser, and DigiKey.
The one I couldn't think of, the main one I couldn't think of was DigiKey. you get a hold of a DigiKey catalog, Jim, anything you can think of is there. Every single integrated circuit that's still available, every value resistor, every brand name of resistor, every size resistor, inductor, capacitor, that DigiKey catalog and those other catalogs, all the parts are there. So nowadays, to try to walk into a brick-and-mortar store and buy the stuff is almost impossible. Online is the way. I think you're going to have to go that way. And on top of that, if you happen to be a member, if, for instance, you were a microwave enthusiast, Jim, and you were a member of the Tom Williams' listserv group called the Microwave Reflector, Tom Williams' Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike, MGA, Mike Juliet Alpha, WA1MGA.org. If you were a member of that group, and it's got about 250 members scattered out around about 50 different countries, if you got on that group and said, I'm looking for this very unusual part, Allied model so-and-so, Gingerich, somebody in that group will say, I've got one sitting on the shelf, it's gathering dust, I'm not using it, I'm going to send it to you. So if you're a member of a group like that, those guys really help each other. In the microwave world, in the ordinary HF world, high frequency type ham radio world, there probably are similar groups, but because I'm not an HF operator, I don't know about them. But I think you're going to have to go online. I think you want to get a hold of a DigiKey catalog, and to have the hard copy equivalent of the DigiKey catalog is the nicest way to go. But even if you don't have that, the online catalog by way of the email, by way of internet, probably is your best thing I can suggest, Jim. KD2BHY, K2RIW in the TechNet. Stand by a minute, Jim. Maybe Steve's got another suggestion. KC2MDP, go right ahead, Steve.
Specifically 40 for the 7040 kilohertz. I've been having a lot of trouble finding those, and also I've been, I have one more quick question. There's, in the schematic for the transmitter that I'm trying to build here, there's a capacitor schematic symbol, and then it says, it just says 0.05. It doesn't give any sort of, unit of measurement or anything. Is there kind of a default for that, or what is 0.05 over a capacitor mean? Is it in microfarads or something?
The answer is yes. Whenever you get a 0. something, anything beyond the decimal point, and no other units defined, 99% of the time, it is microfarads. If it was picofarads, 0.05 picofarads, for instance, is something extremely, extremely small. With rare exception of microwave circuits, you never see less than 1 or 5 picofarads as a capacitor. So anything to the right of the decimal point with zeros to the left will be in microfarads. If this was Europe, you'd have a little bit more confusion because occasionally they use, nanofarads? They do use occasionally nanofarads. In the United States, we do not. Occasionally, they use millifarads. We in the United States do not. We do everything in picofarads, microfarads, and occasionally farads. So we only use the decimal place of exponential unity, 6 or 12. Minus 6 is microfarad, minus 12 is picofarad. So those are the units we use popularly in the United States. I missed your comment about 70 or 40 kilohertz, and I know that Steve also wants to make a comment, but before, repeat your statement about 70 or 40 kilohertz. I didn't catch that one, Jim. KD2BHY, K2RIW.
Dick, he needs a crystal for 7040 low. I can give him some advice.
7040. Okay. So in other words, he wants to go on the 40-meter novice portion of the band, is what I think you're saying. And I guess you're saying that, Rich, you've got some extra crystals laying around. So N2EO, go right ahead with your comment, Rich. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Oh.
I'm not sure, Rich, whether or not you made a comment. If so, we didn't hear it, Rich. We're going to come back to you a little bit later. Steve, KC2MDP, I know that you wanted to make a comment. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Dick, very good. Yeah, I was just going to suggest KRP Electronics. They're over in Farmingdale. I do believe they're on Allen Boulevard. And again, it's another one of those little rinky-dink stores, hard to find, little sign in the window. But they have a large selection of junk over there. And if he doesn't have it, he can get it for you. Back to you, Dick.
WGP with a comment also, Dick.
Good information, Steve. Thank you. John, go right ahead, John. WS, KG2WGB, KG2LAW.
2WGB. Yes, if James gets the Mauser catalog, which is, by the way, 4 inches thick, replete with all types of information, that's a great catalog to have for reference also. And you can find the manufacturer that they're selling the product for, and sometimes contact them directly to buy a onesie piece directly with the manufacturer. And sometimes it's cheaper that way, but it's a great reference catalog to have. I suggest that he calls Mauser or email them, and they'll put them on the catalog list.
Okay, that's a good one, John. To your knowledge, John, is there a minimum order with Mauser? Back to you, John.
Dick, I'm not sure. I do order them quite frequently. I don't remember a minimum order because I've ordered things that are like $12, $15, and there's a shipping charge, but I don't think there is a minimum order with them.
Very good to know. And I think you were looking for a 7.040 kilohertz crystal or something in that vicinity. Quite a few guys on this repeater have a supply of crystals back in the days when they used to run novice rigs and Morse code rigs and whatever. Rich apparently is one of them, N2EO. We weren't able to hear what he said tonight. I think he's probably using his upstairs transmitter. So he wasn't getting through, but one way or another, we'll get you some crystals, Jim. Back to you, Jim, if you need a fill on any of the above. KD2BHY, K2LAW on the TechNet.
Dick, Rich usually recommends Antique Radio Supply of Nebraska, I think it is. That's usually where he gets a lot of his older stuff. That may be what he was trying to relate.
Radio Days, possibly.
Another one, thank you, Vito. Radio Days and Antique Supply of Nebraska. I presume the easiest way to get Antique Supply of Nebraska is by way of the Internet. Is that true, John?
That's N2EO.
Go ahead, Rich.
I was going to suggest a lot of people are out of stock on crystals that are covered in the ham bands. One of the crystals is 6 megs or 8 megs. They're available. That's the problem. You should go on eBay and look, do a scan on the crystal spelled C-R-Y-S-T-A-L, crystal spelled X-T-A-L, the abbreviation, and the type of crystal, the holder, ST243. He might come up, but the scarce is empty. Go ahead, Dick.
Very fine, Rich. Came through very good that time, and thank you. Good information. Let's see if Jim needs a fill on any of the above. And keep coming back, Jim. We'll eventually find you all the parts you're looking for. KD2BHY, KQLAW on the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick, and thank all of you guys. I just wrote all of that down, and I'm going to look. Yeah, Rich is right. There are a lot of crystals out there, but they're just not for the ham bands. I looked all over the Internet. I found a couple, but they were, like, very expensive. Also, I was just wondering, Dick, there's a resistor in the schematic that it just has 27 over it. Is that 27? It just says 27. I was just wondering about that, if you could give me an explanation.
Right, Dick? Yes. When it comes to capacitors, anything that's less than 1 is almost always in microfarads, and also above one. When you get numbers like 0.05, 0.05, that's a capacitor in microfarads. A resistor, very rarely do we have a fraction of an ohm resistor. So resistors that are a number like 27 is 27 ohms. The next jump up would be 27,000 ohms, 27K. And almost always the K will be there. So many schematics will have a little legend on the lower left-hand corner or the right-hand corner saying that the resistors are in ohms, capacitors, unless otherwise marked, are in microfarads. It's a little bit less clear when it comes to inductors. I guess inductors are usually in, it's kind of hard to figure out, is it millihenries or microhenries? There you got a bit of a 50-50 chance, and it better be marked. But resistors unmarked are ohms, capacitors unmarked are microfarads. Over to you, Jim. KD2BHY, KQLAW. Oh, I had my rig set wrong. The audio you gave us on that last transmission was quite low, Jim. Want to repeat what you just said? KD2BHY, KQLAW. John, KC2WGB, KQRW, John, I wonder if you were hearing Jim's audio. I could tell it was there, but it was extremely low in amplitude for some reason. Over to you, John.
Yes, Dick, it was extremely low, and so is Rich, by the way. He was questioning the hooking up of an antenna from what I could copy, but he's going to have to repeat to find out what the problem is with hooking the antenna up. Jim, you want to try it again?
Are you talking a little louder now? I'm not sure if you can hear the audio difference, but I was just wondering, because in the schematic for the transmitter, there's the coil, there's the signal for the coil, and then there's a vertical bar to the right of it, and then there's the antenna symbol. And I'm not sure how to connect the antenna to the coil, if you can hear me better now.
Your audio was perfect that time. And so, antenna symbol to the right of the coil, a vertical bar connected to that antenna, and then I guess you're saying the way the antenna is quite frequently connected to a coil is that it's tapped up on the coil, the bottom of the coil being grounded, the antenna connection a couple of turns up, and the top of the coil going to a resonating capacitor and the rest of the circuitry. That's the way it's sometimes done. That's not the only way. So if I start off with the transmitting antenna symbol, trace down from it, you've got a vertical bar. If the vertical bar doesn't touch anything, that would be confusing. If it touches ground and it's alongside of the coil, maybe it's trying to indicate an inductive coupling circuit. So give us a few more words. From the antenna to that vertical bar, what's on the other end of that vertical bar, the bottom of it, so to speak? It's alongside of the coil. Is it making contact to one of the turns of the coil? Over to you, Jim. KD2BHY, KQLAW.
You want me to just email you the schematic?
Yes, I do that also. But now give me a verbal description. From that antenna symbol, which is connected to a vertical bar, what does the vertical bar connect to, Jim? Go ahead.
Just change positions. One sec. Can you, do you still have good audio?
We're getting beautiful audio, so please proceed, Jim.
Okay, here, let me just turn on my computer and get the schematic up. Yeah, if I remember correctly, here, let me just get this schematic here. Here, one sec. Stand by for a second. I'm going to get the schematic up on my computer, okay?
Roger, Dodger.
Dick, did you get the photos I mailed you?
Yeah, fantastic. Really Stucci gear. Most of those photos are 2005. I think your most modern photo is 2012, which I think is your dog. So are you in any of those pictures, John? Go ahead.
I was taking the forensic photography, but as you can see, some of those insulators that you were looking at, those red insulators, which are almost black from burning, that's all from tracking, by the way, and not being properly cleaned. And 35 kV, and it just goes to show you, those things weigh about 30 pounds. They're about 6 inches in diameter and almost 2 feet long. They just explode. And boy, oh boy, what a mess they make.
I got the schematic, Dick.
Okay, stand by a minute, Jim. Was that due to salt spray that hadn't been properly cleaned off of that insulator that's standing off 35 kV? John, go ahead.
No, Dick, that was just from dust.
Wow. Go right ahead, Jim. KD2BHY, K2LAW.
Sorry about the delay there. I just had to get it up on my computer. But, yeah, it's an antenna symbol, and then it goes down, and then it goes to the left, and then there's a very bold black line going vertically, and then under that there's a grounding symbol.
Yeah, that is a little bit confusing. So I guess about the best thing you could recommend is to mail me a schematic, mail me a copy, me, John, or both. Mail us a copy of it, and we'll try to make a pronouncement. Where did the schematic come from is question number one, Jim. And second of all, I'm guessing that this is not yet a gating item. You haven't collected all of the parts for this transmitter yet. Is that true, Jim? Back to you, Jim.
That is true. I've assembled about half of it, and I have about three-quarters of the parts. There aren't that many parts. There are only like 10 or 12 parts.
Another recommendation, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
James, you might want to Google Fair Radio Sales, Lima, Ohio. They have a lot of old stuff, and I know hams buy from them. They're reasonably priced, been in business a long time. Fair Radio Sales in Ohio.
John, I just wrote that down, and I'll definitely check it out.
Very good. Back to you, Dick.
Okay. The next person on the list was Colin, KC2 Charlie Oscar Whiskey. Go right ahead, Colin, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Japan, everyone else. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about that the flooding in Howard Beach will form up the generators and everything and a lack of electricity. A lot of cell towers and everything were down and disconnected also. As soon as you go over the bridge into Howard Beach, the cell phone just didn't work. The only phone my brother had access to was his wife's mother's phone upstairs, which is the old traditional twisted pair landline. I got rid of a right landline a long time ago, but that was the only phone on that block working. I'm wondering maybe I should revisit that. That was just my comment. I just wanted to throw that in there. So, K2RAW on the net, and everyone else at K2COW.
That's a darn interesting question. But between a rock and a hard place when it comes to the price of telephone service, the portability, I mean, the cell phone has fantastic portability. But the way the average American citizen treats this cell phone, where they want a zillion functions, they want a complete computer in their hand, which means it's going to draw a lot of current, kill the battery real fast. Until a event like this happens, they don't worry about replaceable batteries, plug in power supplies or ways of charging it by way of a cigarette lighter. So the cell phone itself can easily go dead if they choose one that's got a heavy current drain. And then you need the cell sites themselves to be operational. If you're lucky enough to live near a major center, like for instance a lecture hall or a convention center, where the cell companies make sure that there is backup and backup to the backup. In other words, they got backup batteries and they got a generator to back up the batteries. In that case, your local cell site could be very reliable. But as we found out last week, if enough of the infrastructure of the wiring between the cell sites is not operational, the fact that your particular cell site is on the air is not enough. And it might not even be able to communicate between two separate customers that are both using the exact same cell site if it doesn't have the rest of the system to synchronize to and to give it the priority of orders as to who it should talk to and when. So cell site itself, cell phones, we've really fallen in love with them, but boy, during disasters, they've got their problems. The wired system doesn't give you anywhere near as much portability, but depending on how close you are to the central office, it might be the more reliable system. I don't have wired anymore. I've got the Verizon fiber, and the fiber system seems to be very reliable.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The fiber optic system is quite reliable if the battery in your home that maintains its launching electronics, that launches the signal from your voice and voltage all the way into an optical signal, if that circuit is wiring. And in my case, that's a battery backup, which is only good for something like 6 or 8 hours, and it starts beeping at you, and it doesn't work anymore if you haven't got a source of power for that battery, or another way of putting a battery in there. I think it's a gel cell. So we all have to take a very hard look at what we call telephone, which is an extremely important thing when it comes to safety. If you suddenly need a doctor in a hurry, and if you don't have access to a telephone, you're in a heap of trouble. So now you've got to look real hard at the telephone system you've got. What reliability does it have if you don't have a source of power, if your cable network is not working, if your internet is not working, if your underground, if your twisted pair system, if I was living in the town of Bayville and I had twisted pair wiring, which we used to think as a telephone service was very reliable, but an awful lot of that particular system is underground wiring. And in Bayville, when the salt water pours onto that underground wiring, an awful lot of their telephone system goes out of service. So somebody's got to start writing a series of articles of what is the most reliable type of telephone for each individual community. Whatever you choose as what you think is a reliable telephone, it might be true for this particular town, but it might not be true for that particular town. Depending on how far you are from the central service, what kind of interconnect it's got, what kind of backup, and so on. So, telephone is a problem. And you're in Manhattan, Colin, along, I guess, I think you're on the east side of Manhattan, but I'm not sure. And how much of your telephone system do you believe kept working during this event? K2COW.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
K2COW, K2RIW. Go ahead, Colin.
QMB with a comment on it.
We're going to go to Barry right after Colin. Go ahead, Colin.
Okay, KC2COW, and I live in Woodhaven, so my call it was good, calling it Woodhaven. I didn't choose it that way, but that's the way it worked. People in my neighborhood, we never had a problem with anything. Only when we start going down Woodhaven Boulevard in the direction, like Woodhaven to Ozone Park, getting close to Howard Beach. That's when the cell phones, all of them, start going nuts, or just going dead, or whatever you want to call it. I guess the fact that most of the wiring in Howard Beach is up in the air saves the twisted pair landlines, because they're up in the air. Like you said, in some neighborhoods, when the wiring is underground, it gets flooded out and corroded and all sorts of stuff. But people were getting a network of who had landlines, and everyone was running back and forth using those phones to get in touch with people. You know, my Sprint service works fantastic. I'm going all down Woodhaven Boulevard. My phone starts giving me a dumb look, so.
9UQR?
QR, you're right after Barry. Go right ahead, Barry. And I hope you've got power back. And what part of the telephone system in Far Rockaway, to your knowledge, was still on the air during which portion of this event, Barry? N2 Moonbounce, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, real good. NCL, I just got my power back this evening. So I'm still charging the batteries on my house phones, because they're all, you know, wireless and stuff. They're not working. They're starting to work, you know. The most reliable communications during this storm was ham radio. That was it. Mostly for my car. You probably heard me getting on the air from my car because I had power in the car. In the house, everything went down. The only thing that worked, but not well, were the cell phones. They're still not working right, and the problem there is the phone company, that, you know, AT&T, whoever putting up those cell sites, they don't have long enough periods of backup power for the cell sites. They all went down. And they're still giving me trouble. The cell site from tonight from my house is barely working. So I think when it really push comes to shove, there are two methods of communication that work better than the other ones. And believe me, I'm in an area to know this. You know that. The cell phones are pretty good, but you might have to get out of the area because your cell site might go bad after several hours. And the ham radio, I'm telling you, those are the two good ones.
Interesting. Is there a twisted pair wired telephone service in your area of Far Rockaway, Barry? Maybe you're not using it, but for those who do have it, did that survive or does that go down? Back to you, Barry, KQLIW.
The twisted pair went down because the phone company buildings, it goes back to the substations that the phone company owns. And there's one in Far Rockaway, there's another one in Bell Harbor. You know, I know where they are. And they lost power. So they all went down.
So you're telling me your local central office had no source of backup power. Maybe they had batteries for a few hours, but no real generator to back that up is what you're telling me, Barry. Go ahead.
D3ZTZ with info.
The problem...
TZ from the Ontario area.
Okay, the problem was that the one of the offices was flooded. The one on, I think it's 90-something Street, had about 5 feet of water running through the building. So they had a problem. I believe the one in Far Rockaway they might have battery. I don't know, but it didn't last very long. So after about 6 hours, they were gone.
QEO, Dick. Scott, I heard you, and Rich, I heard you, but before both of you was, I think it's N2QR, N2 Quebec Romeo, question mark. Start off with your name, sir, and your comment. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
KQRIW, Dick, I appreciate it. The name here is Greg, the call sign is N9UQR. I've heard you guys a few times, don't know how the question scenario goes. I just wanted to find out if I could ask a question. I know you guys are in the middle of something, so I apologize. I think I may have blown one of my radios, so I'm just a bit concerned. If you could put me in line to ask, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Greg. We're going to put you in line, and I hope we'll get to you. The next person on line was Scott on our main subject, which is safety during the super event. DE3ZTZ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Scott.
Evening to everyone on the net. This is Scott in Toronto, Canada, VE3EZTZ returning. I don't know how it works, obviously, in New York State, but up here in Canada, with regard to the telephone, the wireline telephone system, there are two types of what you refer to as offices. One is a wire center, and the other is a central office. Up here, the central offices are generator-backed, and quite robust. A wire center is usually battery backed and may not have a generator on it. The purpose of a wire center is distance. You're too far from the central office to support the battery and the voltage on the line. So they put in a new subdivision. They put a wire center in. The subdivision is wired to the wire center. The wire center is then linked to the central office. So there's two types of buildings. They look alike, but they don't work alike. And they're backed up differently up here. VE3ZTZ.
VEW, comment.
Okay, and I think I'm hearing Jim also, but let me go back to Scott for a minute. Scott, if you had a massive blackout in your area of Toronto, Canada, that lasted a good number of hours, because of the two different kinds of offices that you described, the central office and the other one, what percentage of the population that's on twisted pair telephone in Toronto would remain in service? What percentage, a rough guess on your part, if you had a massive blackout that lasted a large number of hours? VE3ZTZK2RIW.
Well, if we go back to the big blackout there in 2003, which affected portions of Toronto any for periods of a day and a half to upwards of 3.5 days. My understanding, my telephone wire line throughout the whole period, I understand some people who were hanging off of wire centers went down after about the first 24 hours.
Okay, good information. Jim, we heard you, but there's one person ahead of you, and that is Rich. N2EO, what percentage of Whitestone do you think stayed on the air, or what part of Queens do you think stayed on the air with twisted pair type telephone? If that's what you're about to tell us, Rich. N2EO, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Well, that's not what I was going to mention, but my phone is voice over IP, and the internet went down because the cable went down, so the phone went down. And a lot of people, most people today have cordless phones that are not battery backed up. So even if the phone system stays up and you don't have a wired phone, you're out of luck. The other thing I was going to say is that, like Barry said, case in point, it proves the worth of ham radio. And the reason it's so robust is the fact that it's not a centralized system like a cell site or the internet. It's individual people, and no matter what, there's always some little guy that's going to pop up with a ham radio license and a radio that can communicate outside of the affected area. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I didn't hear the actual comment, but there was a comment made on Newsline that the former Republican candidate made a statement a number of years ago, Mitt Romney, that amateur radio was no longer necessary, that the internet, you know, was around and therefore not necessary. I think it's important to point out to politicians that would sell off frequencies that amateur radio has again showed its worth. Back to that, and to Leo.
Another comment too, Dick.
Amen to that, really, seriously.
John recognized, Barry recognized. And Mitt Romney, there are a lot of people who really like him. But when he says things like AM radio is no longer required, he doesn't know which side the bread is buttered on. When he says he's going to eliminate the subsidy to public broadcasting service, and therefore, even though he likes Big Bird and Elmo have to worry, that is the silliest thing I have ever heard. In my case, he attacked a very sacred cow, and I would not vote for him because he's so darn short-sighted. Yes, you can cut back on the subsidy to a public broadcasting service. They won't go dead and go off the air if you do that, but you're going to slow them down. The rate at which they can make programs like Nova and Science Now and Nature and Frontline and Masterpiece Theater, the rate at which they can generate those programs and the rate at which they can fund those programs is going to be slowed down. And the little bit of money, when it comes to the national debt, to cut back that little bit, which is 0.001%, it creates a lot of grief and it creates no benefit. Craziness. It was short-sighted from my point of view. I think it was John and Barry in that order want to make some further comments. As I said, he attacked the sacred cow in my case, and I didn't vote for him for that reason, among many other reasons. KC2WGB and the group, K2RIW.
Many, many other reasons. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Dick, we're forgetting one other form of communication, which I've always advised my children. Only in an extreme emergency. I don't mean your car is flooded or your basement's flooded. Life and limb. Don't forget the firebox call systems. They usually always work, and there's no problem in pulling that alarm if someone's in danger of losing their life. So that's another thing people should remember.
Except they've been shutting those down left and right. There's none in my area anymore.
Yeah, the five boroughs of New York City had those firebox, coal boxes, but out here in Nassau and Suffolk, we haven't got them. And Barry, I think you're telling us that they're shutting them down in Far Rockaway. And I know you had some further comments. And two moonbound to K2RIW in the TechNet.
Do you need any whiskey?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to keep, you know, holding up the net. But yes, that's true. They're shutting them down left and right. And even the police call boxes, they're shutting those down. I don't know why, but they're doing it.
Well, the police have cell phones.
Okay, we've got Jim next in the queue, and then a person whose call letters began with, ended with whiskey. Jim, BE3 Juliet India Whiskey, I don't think we went to you for your comment. K2RIW, go ahead, Jim.
VE3JIW. Those call boxes use phone lines, possibly, and they disappeared in areas of Toronto. But phone lines, something that happened in the Toronto area, they were losing, they had enough power to run compressors. The compressors are used to keep phone lines dry. There was fear that they were going to get phone lines underground. They were using, they use air pressure to keep the water out. So there's another, I'm not involved in disaster recovery. I test phone equipment and switches with their generators, and I've noticed, you know, it's little things. Like, you notice that they haven't done this service because they haven't taken the paint off a bolt. I asked the guy, I said, look, there's no way you can put a wrench on that bolt and not take the paint off. So lack of service may have compromised generators. But no, phone lines have to stay dry. I don't want to get much into politics, but I will say that we get PBS, and no, I'm past Big Bird, but the other shows mentioned, I can't get them 100 off here over air, but Toronto I get PBS Digital over air, and many people do. So, yeah, it was interesting to watch the politics from a distance, and back to net.
Yeah, between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock tonight on our local New York City PBS station, Channel 13, a beautiful program about the storm itself, Hurricane Sandy, and the way it was tracked, and quite a few views of what damage it did, and quite a few interesting stories. So I'm sure it will be repeated a few times. I do recommend you see the PBS program that was on Channel 13 tonight. And if I know the way they usually do their scheduling, it'll probably be repeated later on tonight and tomorrow and so on. There was a set of call letters ending in W. Somebody tried to sign in. I'm going to pick you up for your comment. We've also got Don into LDY after that. The person ending in W, give me the full set of call letters slowly. K2RIW in the TechNet.
It was the E3JIW getting your attention. Carry on.
Very fine, Jim. Okay, Don was next. N2LDY, go right ahead, Don. K2RIW in the TechNet.
3 a.m. is the next sound, Dick.
Whoever just said whatever he said, it was so extremely loud we didn't hear a single word. Want to try again?
2:30 a.m. on 13, it repeats.
Okay, I guess that was Eric. 3:30 a.m. you're saying it's going to repeat tonight, Eric? Go ahead.
Correct.
Okay, so the program about, for those who can stay up late or set your video cassette recorder, I'm living in the old days, but you know what I mean. So 3:30 tonight, Channel 13. Most likely it's also going to be on Channel 21-1 or 21-3. Is that true, Eric?
21-3 on Thursday. It'll play three times during the day.
Hey, I do recommend that program. Rather well done. So 21-3, three times on Thursday, and again on Channel 13, locally, PBS channel, at 3:30 tonight, that program on the hurricane. Did I go to Don? If not, let me go back to Don again. N2LDY, did I go to you, Don? Where am I? K2RIW, you got it, Don.
Yeah, actually, you did come to me, but somebody else broke in there with that comment or whatever. The other thing, one thing I was going to mention is on the History Channel, there's a show, I don't know if it's the same show as the Channel 13 one, but it's called Superstorm 2012, Hella High Water, and I believe, that was on at 9 o'clock tonight, so there's probably other showings of that. if it's slightly different from the other one that you mentioned. But now, my question for the TechNet, let me just unkey, is, well, different from most of the topics tonight. I had my Genius-sized G5 RV tethered, you know, from one tree to another tree. And, you know, I used some kind of nylon rope. And it was up there for, like, less than, you know, and it was strong. It was a, you know, it was a good gauge nylon, nice, nicely twisted, compact, stiffly twisted or whatever. And I thought it would, you know, last for quite a while. But it lasted less than a year, and it snapped. And it didn't snap during Sandy. It actually snapped prior to that. And I was just curious if there were suggestions onto as to what type of cord would be the best cord for stringing an antenna.
Look, I'm looking for that ad right now. There's an ad in QST magazine. Here it is. Good, found it. If you take a look at the latest issue of QST magazine, the one I happen to pick up happened to be the June issue, but anyhow, High Sierra is the name of a company. High Sierra. Their web page is hamcq.com. www.hamcharliequebec.com. They sell something called Ranger Rope. High Sierra Ranger Rope. What's the magic about this rope is that it's black ultraviolet protected nylon rope, if I understand correctly. And so I, for one, have strung up a particular very heavy branch of a tree in front of my house, which I wanted to save that particular branch, and it broke away, and the branch probably is providing 75 pounds of force on a piece of black nylon rope, which I installed 15 years ago. So once you buy black nylon ultraviolet protected rope, it, from my experience, it can last 15 years. The white kind of nylon rope, 1 or 2 years is all you can depend on. Polypropylene rope, ordinary yellow polypropylene rope, turns into powder in less than 1 year. So if you go to that particular website, I think you're going to find the rope that might be a much better solution for you, Don. N2LZY, K2RIW, the TechNet.
We all take with us both.
Don first, and then we'll go to Rich in that order. Go ahead, Don, if you need a fill.
Okay, that's great. I wrote it down, and I will go there and look that up, and I appreciate the information. So that was all I had to say on my only question. So thanks a lot, and I'll be quick.
Any marine store, too, Dick?
A good marine store also sells black ultraviolet protected rope, and a place used to be called Turnpike Marine, but now it's got another name in Huntington, Army Navy or something like that, on the north side of Jericho Turnpike, 1.2 miles west of Route 110. That store used to have 40 different kinds of rope, including black nylon ultraviolet protected rope, which is where I bought the rope that lasted 15 years in my case. And so Barry has put up some nice antennas for you, which apparently have lasted very nicely over the years and through this particular hurricane. So what are you using there, Rich? N2EO, K2RIW, and the TechNet?
K2YO.
Bernie recognized, but Rich first. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, everything stays up, including the beams for 6-2, 432, and 1296 on the tower. It's a tribute to the good job Barry did. Take a 90-mile-an-hour wind with no damage, it can take anything. I have a Cushcraft R8 vertical in the backyard. It also has been up about 14 years, and I got the black Dacron rope, I believe it is. It's black. I think it's Dacron. I bought it from Ham Radio Outlet, Newcastle, Delaware. So you can, if they still have it, it's 14 years later. But if you call them up, they'll deliver it to you. And shipping from Newcastle, Delaware is 1 day. So if he orders it Monday, he'll have it Tuesday. Back to that.
Got a little hum there, Rich.
Very good information, Rich. And sounds like you're you're holding your microphone alongside of a fluorescent lamp, so your hum was about 7 dB weaker than your voice. We heard your voice very well, but a reasonably loud hum. Bernie, what's your favorite kind of rope? Or what any other subject you'd like to talk about, Bernie? K2 Yankee Oscar, K2LAW in the TechNet. Wonder if you got an email from me.
Yes, QSL Dick. John, recommendation, Google Quicksilver. John B. is a big supporter of the club. He comes to all of our HemFests, and he sells that black Dacron rope. I've had good success with it. This is what everybody's talking about, and you'll be buying it from a vendor that's good friends with the club.
Very good information, Bernie. Bernie, on a quick break, were you without power for a while? Was your community one of the lucky ones that didn't have anywhere near as many great big trees falling down and power outages and whatever? Over to you, Bernie.
Absolutely no, Dick. My neighborhood, at least the trees fell and missed houses. On one section of Clinch Avenue, about a half-mile section, there were 31 oak trees down. They looked like toy soldiers that had just been mowed down.
Wow. And obviously with that, lots of power lines, lots of trees falling across roads. In your case, when it comes to power outage by way of trees, I'm going to guess that power wiring yanked off the poles by the trees and broken is the major source of failure, as opposed to the telephone poles themselves snapping. Is that a good guess on my part, Bernie? Go ahead.
Yes, affirmative. We went down in a large section very early on in the storm, so I think that was some kind of a main went down. But our neighborhood is terribly susceptible to trees falling on power wires. I know you and I and others have had heated discussions about putting those silly things underground, but yeah, the majority of it was trees falling down. I only saw two telephone poles broken, one of which was caused by a tree fell on a pole that broke it. The other one, I couldn't really ascertain what broke it, so I have to assume that was just the wind pressure on it. But yes, the majority of our outage was caused by trees. We were down for 9 days and then down for another day with the snowstorm.
Nick, I got a quick comment about that rope that Richie and myself are using.
Go right ahead with a comment on the rope, Barry, and then I'm going to go back to Bernie with another question for what happened in Garden City. N2 Moonbound, K2LAW, what's the best rope that you know? Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, yeah, that rope is very good, but it has one problem you must be aware of. It cannot stand rubbing, and it chafing kills it. So you can't run it over a tree limb and down to a pulley, or it can't even have a branch rubbing on it. I have a piece that was just going over the corner of my house, you know, and down to the ground, and just a little motion along the side of the house is enough to ruin it. So it works great as long as it doesn't rub anything. It has to be free and clear of branches and everything. And then it works fine.
Now, when it comes to tying knots and ropes like that, where you want the minimum stress on the rope because of the sharp bends in the knot, so to speak, bowline is a very good knot. Square knot is not so good. If you must join two pieces of rope and you want the highest possible strength of the knot when you join two pieces of rope, definitely look up Kerrick Bend. Kerrick Bend is the name of a knot, which is a little bit elaborate. It's a good one to learn to tie, and it's known by all of the real good sailors as the highest strength knot you can use to join two pieces of rope together. Okay, Bernie, in Garden City, you described what it was like. Very few of the telephone poles were snapped. You probably were doing more listening than I was, and I guess I was hearing it from the man who lives in Bayville, Pete, I guess it was. Somebody was telling me that in the town of Oyster Bay, as a result of the storm, they saw a huge long line of what sounded like 7, 8, 9, 10 consecutive telephone poles, brand new telephone poles, super high in height, were installed as a result of this particular storm. You might have some words on that because I only partially got that story. K2 Yankee Oscar, if you happen to know, K2LAW in the TechNet.
No, I don't have any information on that. I know there were some pole crews on New Hyde Park Road. resetting some new poles, and they also had set some earlier in the year. They put a whole new string of them up nearer to the LIE, and those seem to fare pretty well. They were putting in taller ones. These babies are tall. I'm guessing there's a 60-foot telephone pole. I really haven't stopped to measure one because I'm driving, but those all seem to fare pretty well. I do have a memory of the storm, and yes, everybody can line up to call me crazy, but I went out and I took my wife out, and we went walking around in the hurricane to see the neighborhood. You know, how often in your life do you have a chance to be in a hurricane? But while I was looking out the window and standing on my front porch, I was just seeing one after another of transformer explosions. It has that big green arc in the sky, kind of like land-based lightning.
And I've got a slightly similar experience. After all the wind died down, and I thought the storm was over, this is very close to midnight, Monday night in Huntington, I took a walk of just one block, a square one block around my neighborhood. And I probably in that one square block saw 10 massive trees down. Lots of them across the streets and across the telephone lines, across the power lines. But every 60 seconds, and I'm in a heavily treed area, so I don't see the horizon very clearly. Every 60 seconds, I saw a flash of light on the horizon due to high voltage arcing of power lines coming down or hitting the ground or fuses on transformers letting go. As I said, approximately every 60 seconds. And you didn't hear any sound because it took place a long distance away, but lots of flashing at nighttime. You were looking out your picture window, I guess, of your house, and was it like every 60 seconds you saw a flash and lots of different directions? Is that approximately what you were seeing, Bernie? K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW.
Wasn't that frequent, but definitely that's what I was seeing. And remembering that we lost our power early on, and there was a major section of New Hyde Park, Garden City, et cetera, that all went black at once. Probably, it was probably 3 or 4 o'clock on Monday. It was before the real party started, shall we say. So we were black for quite a ways. But, yeah, there were definitely, and when I say transformers blowing, if Richie PPM is around, he can straighten me out. It may not have been transformers, but it was definitely electrical stuff going up.
The next guy on the list, we should go to Paul to find out what's going on with NASA. After that, I think we're going to go for, I'm pretty sure John has gotten a couple of letters from guys who don't yet have their ham license who want to know something about the storm or about electronics. We're going to go to John after Paul. After that, I'm going to ask you guys for a way to help me. This new Channel Master antenna rotator that I've got. Something is really crazy about its electronics. Maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but I'll ask you guys that question later. Paul, WS2N, if you're available, how are things going with Curiosity? And there's been a very nice PBS special on the Curiosity spacecraft, the Mars Science Laboratory. And I think they're seeing stronger and stronger evidence of water and maybe carbon, and maybe eventually we're going to see hydrocarbon residuals on Mars, suggesting that Mars at least had the capability at one time of supporting early kinds of life. I believe that's what we're going to find out. WS2N, K2RIW. Go ahead, Paul. And maybe Paul is not there yet. Maybe he'll come back. And as soon as he does, he can check in right away. John, what kind of letters have you gotten during the last week or two? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. KC2WGB. Have a couple of questions. Let's see. Pick some here that are going to be quick. Oh, okay. Have a gentleman who's interested in acoustic recording, acoustic elements underwater, and he wants to know what can he use for a transducer or microphone that would be waterproof, and if can he build it? Should he purchase it? Maybe you can give us some tips on that.
That's something I ain't never done, John. Never did any underwater recording. I do remember, though, in my youth, whenever I had my head underwater and I